This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity and Business Podcast. We're going to talk today with Amber Walsh. Amber's on the executive committee at McGuire Woods and one of the leading figures in the private equity industry in healthcare. We're going to talk today about value-based care models and investments in companies to support those, and talk about what you're seeing and what's interesting. Amber, tee us up. Tell us about value-based companies, value-based care models, and what you're seeing in terms of companies that support these and investments in them and the things that are going on.
I am very happy to. This is a really interesting trend that really started a long time ago, a decade ago or more, private equity's interest in value-based care models and a recognition a long time ago by private equity that this was a trend, while certainly slow to start. I think there's been a lot of complaints in the healthcare industry about how slow we've been to move away from traditional, you know, pay-per-click and fee-for-service into more value-based care. Even so, despite how you feel about the speed of moving towards more value-based care, private equity, of course, by nature, recognizes, examines trends, and makes investment decisions based on trends that are likely to continue. And this is certainly one that's been well recognized. In the past year, we've seen even a greater proliferation of investment by private equity, not just in the providers. So Wildflower, women's health company, for example, where TT Capital invested, and there's numerous, Oak Street by General Atlantic, there's numerous, but not just putting their investments into the providers who are doing value-based care or moving their existing providers into more of a value-based care model, but investing in the support companies that make it possible for a provider to actually move into value-based care and manage that unique reimbursement and performance metrics and the things that are required.
Will this slow down or move faster as sort of investment technology gets hit on the chin a little bit? Because a lot of this is technology that supports these providers. What are you sort of seeing there? Is there just, I did see Contessa, which is value-based care model around orthopedics, was bought by, one of the large home health companies. What are you seeing here? Is this going to accelerate or slow down, or what do you expect?
I would assume it would continue to accelerate. And so you're right. You have, when you look at it just from the technology angle, you do have the headwinds against it of just how high valuations got and really kind of peaked and were exacerbated with COVID and the move to telehealth and all of that. So you do have that that's weighing in. But I can't fathom that investor interest in investing in these tools, meaning investing through their own existing provider, you know, their physician services companies, investing in the tools to purchase for those companies, but also putting their capital in those companies to grow. I can't fathom that there's going to be a lack of interest. I mean, just a couple of days ago, as we track these healthcare private equity investments into the industry, just a couple of days ago, Riverside Partners announced their investment in Unislink, which does rev cycle management, population health, largely focused on accountable care organizations and other value-based enterprises. That's just one from a couple of days ago. And as I look back at this tracker, there are many, many on this list, and I can't fathom that that's going to slow down.
Fascinating. Fascinating. So lots of interest here in anything value-based care. Unislink's sort of a mix. It's as much a revenue cycle company as any of these other things. But still, the point is there's still just a tremendous amount of interest in healthcare technology, healthcare investing, and healthcare is not going away, even if the big systems are facing a bit of their own recession in financial results and so forth. It's not going away in a big, big part of the economy going forward. Fascinating. Amber, any other advice or things to think about as they look at these spaces?
Yeah, one of the interesting angles here that I think is particularly novel to me, and I've done some reading, there's a really interesting JAMA article from some medical ethicists who are kind of weighing in on a different angle to the debate about whether or not private equity is good or bad for the healthcare system. And they put an interesting angle on it with value-based care, and I'm starting to see this talked about more, which is, you know, if you happen to be in the mindset where I am, which is absolutely look at private equity as certainly not the salvation for healthcare, but it's also not the root of all evil. And if you look at it from the mindset of private equity, if nothing else, can provide the capital infusion that's necessary to help healthcare providers to invest in the tools they need to be able to do a whole host of things for the patient population that they serve. If you can look at private equity from that angle and then weave in, the value-based care angle and recognize that the more private equity embraces and moves towards value-based care, then you've actually introduced a new angle to the whole value-based care alignment strategy. The fundamental alignment in value-based care that historically has been talked about is the alignment between payers and providers to have the same goals and to be paid based on those goals in a way that's good for the patient population. When you weave in private equity into that mix as a very important stakeholder, no matter what you think about private equity is here in healthcare and will be for probably forever. Now you can see an alignment of the investor community alongside providers and payers. And maybe that's a Pollyanna way of looking at it, but I happen to like to view the world that way. And I appreciate that. So if you're a private equity investor, starting to embrace the value-based care for a whole host of reasons. The fact that it's a trend that's probably not going away. The fact that there are tools out there and support systems that can help your portfolio investment actually figure out how to do well and actually make money on a value-based care model. And the fact that it helps take some of this public pressure off with the regulators and some bad press for private equity, it helps to take a little bit of that pressure off too, because you as an investor and a representative of the private equity community are showing your alignment with payers in moving in this direction that most people want the healthcare industry to go. So I know that's kind of a lofty ideal, but I think it's a very interesting element to this that I'm starting to hear talked about a little bit more.
No, thank you. And private equity, the demonization of private equity, if you want to demonize for-profit healthcare, fine. I don't agree or disagree. Don't generally agree. But you could demonize for-profit healthcare, you know, and then private equity is just a piece of for-profit healthcare. So it's making a distinction between private equity healthcare and for-profit healthcare, to me, is a distinction without a difference, even though the Elizabeth Warrens of the world and some of the politicians do love to demonize, and no reason to pick on Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders specifically. They just do like to pick on the private equity community, but it's a distinction without a difference to me than for-profit healthcare. Particularly the big for-profit healthcare ends up leveraging things as well. So if you view leverage as negative, which many of us view too much leverage as negative anyways, but you've got, but you're right. You're right on. I mean, the fact that it's a private equity fund that's investing in things versus not, to me, it shouldn't be a relevant distinction, even though periodically gets demonized by politicians on the right and left.
I couldn't agree more, Scott.
Absolutely. Amber, always fascinating. I mean, it's fascinating to see. The thing that I have found most fascinating is, again, and I am always a skeptic, so bear with me, is the life conversion of big health systems to value-based care that happened and doubled down during the pandemic when everybody saw anybody who was in the value-based care business made so much money, whether insurance companies, Medicare Advantage plans, Medicare Advantage groups, anybody in that sweet spot made so much money during the pandemic for really all the wrong reasons. And that has led to a conversion to value-based care across the spectrum. And when I say for all the wrong reasons, some people made so much money in value-based care during the pandemic for the sole reason that surgeries couldn't be performed. And this left medical expense ratios much lower than typical. And those plans, insurance companies, and systems that were value-based care driven, and Medicare Advantage plans, and big primary care groups that were big into Medicare Advantage, hyper-profitable for all the wrong reasons, meaning because healthcare services couldn't be delivered. But it will be fascinating to see as that period is over, at least the period where you just can't do surgery and medical expense ratios are artificially low. It will be interesting to see this conversion will stay, but the world is changing so much. The large systems like Intermountain so heavily into value-based care and so many systems making that conversion. But a fascinating period of time, a really interesting evolution.
You just hit on something. One of the very few early days negatives talked about value-based care was the extent to which it could mean that patients aren't actually getting the care they need. So, of course, a proper model and the more modern models address that. They address that you don't get your payment. You're not actually providing value if you're just limiting necessary care. So I thought it was interesting what you just mentioned there, which is very different than what happened in COVID, but it was one of the early critiques of value-based care that I think has been largely corrected. But thank you for letting me join you today. I love this topic.
Always a pleasure, and thank you. Just brilliant as always, Amber Walsh, Executive Committee at McGuire Woods, one of the nation's leaders in healthcare private equity community. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.